everyone. Welcome back to another episode of CCYSC Awaaz. I'm Ayushi Mishra from New Delhi, India. Today, I'm speaking with Ramay Anand, who is a senior program manager for Tarshi, a Delhi-based non-government organization focusing on rights-based sexuality education. Hi, Ramay. Welcome to our podcast series. Thank you for letting us pick your brain. It's an absolute pleasure to have you join us.
Thank you so much, Ayushi. And it's a great opportunity for me to be here too.
So today's episode is all about sex, sexuality, and sex education. Tarshi has been working towards expanding sexual and reproductive choices by empowering people to make informed decisions for the last 25 years. They hold both online and offline workshops for educators in order to help them build a more comprehensive approach to sexuality education. Let's dive right into it. Ramaya, could you please tell me, what do you understand when you say comprehensive sexuality education? Like, what does CSE entail? And what, in your opinion, are some of the key issues and themes you believe it must include?
Thanks. That's a great question. I think one of the biggest misconceptions around is around the word CSE. The moment we say it's sexuality education, people think that it's something to do with sex. It's like, you know, we're going to teach children or young people to have sex. So, it's important to have a better understanding of what it is. Comprehensive sexuality education just goes beyond just giving information and knowledge, but also addressing key values and attitudes and skills and things like that. So I think that's one of the ways where we do prepare young people to be able to make informed choices, which is free from coercion or which is free from judgments and all that.
So are there any key issues that you would say that sexuality education must include in itself?
One of the few things that needs to be talked about more openly is that surrounding around consent and power when we talk about sexuality education, because many times that we see around what happens is that it comes from a place of fear, shame, guilt when we talk about sexuality. Whereas CSE is more around something to do with consent or body autonomy, bodily right that children and young people should have, it could be more broader and more engaging with the children also.
So from the way you have described it, it seems like the kind of sexuality education Tarshi provides, it's quite different from the one we got in school. And there seem to be some major differences. So I would love to know what are the main things that would be different between the two?
I mean, if I have to go back to my own school days, I don't even remember whether I even had any such conversation. If at all there were, it was more restricted to reproductive health, especially growing age, especially for girls. Now, that is something I think many of the schools have started to do is talk about menstruation, menstrual hygiene to specifically girls. And after that, I really doubt if any other ways of conversation is happening. So Tarshi's main, one of the ways of seeing sexuality education is just not talk about abuse or violence or infection, but then talk about pleasure-affirming, sex-positive approach. So, because, you know, it's actually difficult to talk about abuse if we have not spoken about pleasure. I mean, where does that kind of understanding even come from if we don't talk about pleasure or desire with young people? So, that is one approach that Tarshi takes, and we also promote that this is the way that CSE would be more effective.
Wow, I absolutely love the taking pleasure in order to understand abuse approach, discussing pleasure, because it is extremely important to me as well. If sex itself is taboo, then it can be almost impossible to talk about abuse and of any kind. So Other than this, are there any other advantages that you see in that you see comprehensive sexuality bringing for both students and teachers alike?
Yeah, in fact, in many of the workshops that we have had, so Tashi, one other thing, Tashi has specifically worked with service providers when it comes to sexuality education. One of the key reasons is that when we do directly talk to children, especially as an outside organization, there is no follow-up that would happen. Like it's like just opening this Pandora box where we just like giving information to the children or young people, and then we are not able to follow through. So we thought what would be best is to have this kind of trainings to the teachers and the educators or counselors within the schools, so that they are able to follow up with the children when, I mean, basically they are able to, first of all, incorporate these ideas while they are taking their lessons, and then they are able to follow through it also. So going back to the question, yeah, so our approach has mostly been is to, for the teachers or the adults to be able to unlearn their own bias, because all of us come with our own internalized, you know, bias when it comes to sexuality. There's so much of conditioning that has happened through our lives. So I think that is one of the, what do you say, key things that we work on when we do our trainings and workshops with the teachers and educators. It is to, for them to reflect on why are they having a certain discomfort when it comes to talking about sexuality, whether it is a pleasure or whether it is abuse or whatever it is. So for them to be able to reflect on then and then see how are they going to take this forward to their children or the young people that they are engaging with.
I agree. I mean, it often feels as though we as young adults are expected to fend for ourselves. We have to learn and practice safe sex without truly knowing what it entails. We have to create an entire sense of self without knowing anything about sexuality, gender identity, gender expression. We are just expected to know without ever being taught anything. And like you said, on top of that, there is so much social stigma attached to any conversation about sex, sexuality, gender. And it's very difficult to communicate the advantages to discussing such a topic, which is so shameful and taboo for many, many people. In fact, I distinctly remember when I was being taught in school, it was very difficult for my teachers to talk about sex in the classroom, even my biology teachers. And they would just limit the discussion to some topics and move past the rest. Mm-hmm. So are there any particular strategies that Tashi workers use to make help educators feel more comfortable with such conversations in the classroom?
One other thing we have tried to do is, irrespective, you don't have to be a counselor or an exclusive sexuality educator to talk to children about sexuality. So this is something that one, as a subject teacher, say, for instance, whether it is biology, whether it is max or literature, any such thing, a teacher trained in any subject can incorporate some of the ideas of sexuality while talking to the children, because it then doesn't, first of all, it doesn't become like one separate class when we all are making the children sit and now I'm going to talk about, you know, something like that. I mean, it doesn't make them feel that way. And the messaging happens, keeps happening every time in many other ways, which can be very effective for the children also. I'm not sure whether I am clear in what I'm saying, but basically to say that, supposing, say, it's a max subject and the max teacher, while giving examples, should not just, can be mindful about what are the kind of problems that they're giving, whether it is gender, whether it is only talking about the man buying something from the shop, or whether it involves women also in that way, or when it is about literature, what are the kind of passages that we are letting the children read? I mean, what are the kind of interpretations are we making out of the books that they are reading? So sexuality is not just restricted to one period. It can be broadened throughout the day, in the games, in the art activity, in all kinds of subjects. So that's something that we, at the end of the trainings, we let the teachers think about it. Like, in what ways can you incorporate in your own subjects about a sexuality or gender?
Right. And it makes sense that if we keep limiting it to this one class, then it will be, it'll be seen as this, oh, this one period where you're allowed to talk about it, and everywhere else it still continues to be a taboo. So yeah, that definitely makes sense to make teachers more comfortable, even normal subject teachers, to be more comfortable. Now, when you do these trainings, do you train normal teachers, or do you train specialized teachers who will take these, who will teach sexuality education, or do you take it for everyone as a whole?
So generally, it's been the school, it totally depends on what the school decides. But then most times it's been the complete staff, teaching staff have been in our trainings. So it is not just the counselor or somebody who is specialized in psychology or something like that. In fact, in many schools, the training has been given to non-teaching staffs also. Supposing, say, it is a clerk in the office or the Aya who's looking after the children, everybody have been given training. So I think that is the way it should be, because what happens is that if they're all not on the same page, again, there are going to be mixed messages that the children are going to receive. So it's very important that the complete staff in a certain organization or a setting at least are aware about these things, and they are more mindful. That's how it has been.
Right. So one thing that Tashi is known for are your CISA spaces. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but could you talk a little bit more about this recent project that you guys have taken?
So CISA, it's been for some years that we've been doing some kind of research and understanding how CISA spaces can be created in all organizations. CISA is safe, inclusive, sexually affirming spaces, wherein we mean that whether a particular space is offering this kind of environment. So it includes, broadly to say, it is something which takes in account diversity, inclusiveness, and talking about mental well-being, or whether an organization has certain policies, whether it is affirming to sexuality in terms of whether there is any kind of discrimination. So to say that this is what we've done, we've been doing this more or less for development agencies, like within NGOs and other organizations. We are yet to go to schools to do it, but that is going to be one other work that we'll be doing in the future.
So can you tell me a little bit more about what organizations you have worked with while creating these spaces, and what is the final purpose, like final goal that you're trying to achieve with this, with speaking to these organizations whom I'm not sure, do they work with children, or are there any organizations for all human beings?
We have right now been doing with organizations who work on SRHR and gender and sexuality, more or less. And so the outcome is that we together are able to have a common understanding of what are the best practices that one could have, and what are the challenges that we are all facing, and what are the gaps, and then try to see how can we bridge these gaps. What do we need for these gaps to be bridged in terms of training or infrastructure or any kind of other support? So basically, it's more like having a conversation with each other and having a collective idea or understanding of what is the best practice one could have in order to have a CISA space.
Right. But despite all of this, I am sure you still face some apprehension from teachers who are worried about providing a comprehensive sexuality education, especially to young children. a lot of people argue that comprehensive sexuality education should start from a young age. But in India, that is not something that we do. We are often treat children as asexual beings. So how do you make people a little more comfortable and understanding of the idea that it is actually useful to young children as well?
So, I mean, there are various types of trainings that we do. One is that we offer a training, which is a face-to-face training. I mean, this is pre-COVID times. And then we also have some publications, some books, which can be used by teachers. And there are also e-learning courses that we have where there is a engagement that happens. But overall, when schools do approach us for such trainings, there is a possibility that there is an incident that had happened in the school because of which they kind of panic and they want some kind of training to happen. So invariably, they might approach us to specifically talk about child sexual abuse if there has been an incident. So, but then we make them clear that that is not the only thing that we will talk about. While we talk, we would definitely talk in the multitude of aspects related to CSE. So, of course, there are a lot of apprehensions amongst teachers, and our trainings are generally very, very interactive. In the sense, it is not like a lecture format where, you know, we just give a certain yarn to them. It is for them to, as I told earlier, just for them to reflect their own bias, their own discomfort, and over time they are able to then build and see the importance of CSE amongst imparting or like giving education CSE education to their own children and feeling the need for something like that. Of course, we've had many various resistance also. Even within one particular group, there could be a strong one or two people resisting the ideas, and the other teachers might also then have a counter viewpoint to it. So most of it comes very organically while they are having the discussion. I think one of the most important ways is for them to give a chance to speak about these, because they don't, even amongst teachers, there isn't an opportunity or a space for them to talk about these issues in their school or probably in their personal lives also. So in fact, at the end of each training, I mean, like, I can vouch for this to say that everybody feels extremely, I mean, they are able to see the importance of these conversations. And one of the common feeling that we have seen coming is that, you know, if I had this kind of information while I was growing up, I could have made better choices for my life. You know, this is like a very strong viewpoint that comes from the teachers that we've trained. So they are able to see through it. Of course, unlearning takes a lot of time. I mean, we can't even expect that, okay, after a 4-day training, you know, everything is going to change. But then I think in some ways or the other, they become a little mindful or try and read more about it, update themselves a little more. And then I think one of the important thing what happens is that amongst themselves, after we leave the training, amongst themselves, there is this conversation that open up. They are at more ease to talk with each other when that is an issue. I mean, this is what we've heard when we have followed up with them also.
Wow, that sounds like an amazing achievement, because I've seen schools and I know how worried they are about discussing such things within the school space, and it's kept to the private sphere and it's rarely brought on to the public sphere.
Just to add, like, these trainings by itself cannot like change everything overnight. Yeah, these measures need to be consistent also. I mean, like, just one training cannot do wonders. So there has to be consistent conversation that is being opened up again and again, so that, you know, unlearning is such that you need repetitive messages coming. So that I wish was happening more often, in the sense that repetitively like consistently these trainings need to be institutionalized in some way, either in teachers training right from the very beginning, or you know, the school has a certain format where every year or something they are opening up such kind of discussions within their own staff members and things like that. I mean, that is a way to attaining more openness, or you know, for more success or something, I would say.
Right. So do you ever get the opportunity to go back to the schools that you have attended and take another session with them after a year, or like repetitive phase?
Yeah, some of them, I wouldn't say all the schools, but yeah, some of them have approached us because even their staff changes. So they want to make sure that the new members in their team are also getting trained. And we've been able to also follow up with some few other schools to see how they have incorporated these insights in their day-to-day school curriculum and all that. In fact, one of the school at least has got back with creating one curriculum, and they wanted us to assess it. I mean, basically they created a curriculum, age appropriate curriculum for each of their classes, and they wanted us to review it also. So, I mean, yeah, it all depends on the will and intention, I guess, of them. So for us, it is just like, you know, one of those seeds that we sow in their minds, and if they are able to kind of nurture it, it's going to grow, I guess.
So like you mentioned, this one space where they actually created a curriculum, are there any common changes that you see in the organizations when they have called you multiple times through the years when you have worked with them? Have there any changes that you have noticed that in the conversation that happens within this?
Definitely there are. I mean, they do want to understand more and more, and they then talk about their own personal experience of how they have been able to make some changes in their own personal lives, and what have they done in their school differently. And I think the more and more we have these conversations, the more and more the internalized bias also are being questioned. And yeah, I mean, definitely I see that there is more changes in schools which have come to us more often. Or, I mean, if not us, I would say if they are opening these conversations at their own space, you know, that would be, that is also very effective.
That sounds wonderful. In these workshops that you take, do you also discuss the legal aspects of sexuality education? Like, I know there are a lot of current issues from your Section 355 to all of them, to even assault cases, and what the law says, especially with children, what the law says, what protects them, and what is the role of adults in protecting children from these things?
We don't go too much into legal aspects, but we do talk about POCSO, because that is something for teachers, for the school system to keep in mind, because when they are making their own policies, I think it's important for them to understand it better, but not specifically on any kind of domestic violence or those kinds of law. I mean, nothing like related to that. We might give them a broad idea of the existing law, but we don't deep dive because we are not competent enough, first of all, to do that. And if at all they ask for a session for that, then we might tell them. But then broadly, it's been mostly to do with, you know, some of the themes that we actually discuss with them mostly revolves around consent. So whether it is to do with body autonomy or like understanding our bodies better, gender identities, sexual orientation, and relationships, and body image. So these are some of the broader issues that we've been discussing. Also violence and abuse and pleasure. I mean, like what things like, you know, internet, mental health, what are the kind of emotions that children have while they're growing up, and So these are most of the issues that we've been.
Thank you so much for all the information you have given us so far. Finally, before we close out, do you have any thoughts or suggestions that you might have for teachers and educators listening to this podcast about what they can do for themselves and their students?
Thanks so much, Aishi. Yeah, I think concerned adults, whether it is teachers, educators, parents, or caregivers, for us to understand that the importance of having these conversations with children and making these conversations more relevant to their times, because we know that if we are not going to give information about these, they are anyway going to get it from inappropriate or unreliable sources, which we don't want them. So it's best that it comes from the right source with the right kind of perspective. This is just not also about information, but also about skill building, whether it is to do with negotiation skills, whether they are able to understand consent, whether they are able to deal with rejection, how are they processing all the information that comes from the media related to body image and things like that. How are they navigating these very many messages that are all around them? So I think, we all know that how it is very important. And if we are not equipped enough, it's time for us to prepare ourselves for these, get our training. Of course, school authorities should have political will and they should feel the need to train their staff towards sexuality and give them sufficient support, sufficient time out for them to understand. And yes, I think we can go a great way along if we are able to invest more on these and understand the importance, I guess.
Thank you so much. That sounds like great advice. And it is definitely one that I will take with me to a classroom someday. It was lovely talking to you. Thank you for providing us with these insights. And for our listeners who are interested in knowing more about Tashi and the work they do, feel free to check out their website. We will try to add the link in the description. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot. Yeah.